Good morning, everybody. Good to have you with us here on the Mark Steiner Show on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. And as you know, we've been talking about this election a great deal, and there's been a lot of debate on this program with some of the guests you're about to hear now about who to vote for in this election. And we've covered the map and had Republican-Democrat debates, had the Green Party candidates on here, and more. One of the continuing conversations with people on the air here is, should I vote for Hillary Clinton or not? And let's deal with the reality is that the vast majority of our listeners are either going to vote for Hillary Clinton, or they're going to vote for third party, or they're not going to vote at all. And I think there's a minority of our listeners who will be voting for Donald Trump. I don't think it's a huge number, but they're probably out there as well. We've heard from a few of them, but and that's not disparaging to them. Maybe to their candidate, but not to them. But I do think it's important for us to wrestle with this particular question, because I think it's become front and center about what happens in November and how important and unimportant it is who sits in that White House. We're joined once again by Dr. Jared Ball, Associate Professor of Media Studies here at Morgan State University, host producer at The Real News of I Mix What I Like, and a frequent commentator on this program. Jared, good to have you back with us.
Always a pleasure. Thanks a lot. Although I am no longer with The Real News.
That's right. I'm sorry. That was on the. That should not have been on there. I went.
It's cool. It's cool. Just to clarify. I did do it.
You did. I'm not there anymore. You did do it. A lot of people did do it. Okay, so Liza Featherstone is with us. She's a contributing editor to the Nation, where she writes the advice column Asking for a Friend. She's editor of False Choices, the Faux Feminism of Hillary Clinton. Liza, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Yeah, nice to be here. Thanks.
Quincy Gamble's in the studio here with me. Quincy is a Democratic Party operative, ran a number of campaigns, gubernatorial and other campaigns, as well as a labor activist. And in the studio, Quincy, good to see you.
My man, good to see you.
And Carla Wills joins us by phone or Skype. I'm not sure what you're on, but you're here. As she's senior news editor for Democracy Now! Carla, welcome.
Thanks for being for having me.
Good, always good to have you here. And you all join us here at 410-319-8888. You can write to us here, talk@steinershow.org, by email. You can tweet us at Mark Steiner, but do join in. We want to hear your thoughts, 410-319-8888. So let's dive right into this. I mean, one of the things we debated yesterday in this program at the end of the show, as we were talking about the other day, we were talking about the vice presidential debate on Monday, I should say, Wednesday. I forget what day it is sometimes. We do so many shows. But so it ended up being a debate on how important is it for Hillary Clinton to be president of the United States. The majority of people in the room of that day were saying, look at the Supreme Court. Look what the future of our children would be if anybody but Hillary Clinton wins this election, because it would be between Hillary and Trump. Mm-hmm. So, Liza, let me let you begin, because it's been a while since you've been on the air with us. How would you respond to that?
I don't disagree. I think it would be a much better outcome for Hillary Clinton to win the election than for Donald Trump to win the election. You know, I mean, it's I'm extremely sympathetic with people who say that they could never possibly vote for her, but look, you know, Donald Trump is a demagogic racist I think we know very little about what he would do policy-wise, but it's already demonstrable that just his being out there does really ignite the white id in ways I don't think we really want to see. You know, and for him to be elected president, I think would disturbingly strengthen some of the uglier xenophobic racist undercurrents in American society. So, I mean, I'm really sympathetic to people who say they won't vote for Hillary, that the victims of the kind of militaristic policies that she's pursued overseas are more numerous than the victims of right-wing populism, that the kind of austerity, war on the poor that she championed with welfare reform and mass incarceration, that those are those are equally serious issues. So, you know, I'm very sympathetic to people who say they won't vote for her. But I actually do think that beating Donald Trump is important.
Jared Ball, and so what's the other side of that?
Since
well,
I
don't know about the
side.
Other side. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know that I'm, you know, I don't know about the other side. My perspective is, you know, I mean, but my own perspective is that this is, that in part because of some of the reasons we just heard, that this is a pristine moment to try to bust up the two-party system and the Democratic Party's holds on the left, or the supposed left, mm-hmm. Where we have a chance to vote in this case for a Green Party that if they get 5%, they get, you know, full status and full funding, and we can maybe build a real alternative electorally going forward. And we're very close to that, and I I'd like to see that in part again because we cannot. The same argument I continue to make: we can't keep coming back to the same patterns of behavior, looking again at what the Democratic Party is. It is, first of all, I mean, there's this confusing, I think, false dichotomy between what Trump being described as a racist and a demagogue who is going to open the gates to a white supremacist, you know, horde that in the likes we've never seen. But on the other hand, you know, and that's sort of supposed or suggested or hypothesized. But we have the very real Hillary Clinton, who has not only said the horrific things racially, mm-hmm. but supported and enacted policy that has actually led to the conditions in which we find ourselves now, in part leading us to where we feel like, among so many of us, that we have only these two options because Trump has been allowed, the Trumpism that we see in this case in electoral politics has been allowed to thrive in part, in large part because the Democratic Party has been, you know, a total failure in terms of being a space where progressives can go to enact their policy hopes and dreams. It has been a total success in doing what it is designed to do, that is to be a place where the hopes and dreams of progressives and radicals go to die, and gives this, again, false dichotomy that we're stuck with now. So, again, I think this is, a pristine moment for us to take advantage of this horrific set of options that are so readily and easily seen to so many, and build this, at least in this one case, one other option.
Mm-hmm. Quincy, before we turn to Carla, why don't you jump in, then we'll go to Carla. Wills.
Well, great to be with you and all your guests this morning. And I will definitely agree with Dr. Ball in saying that we are in a unique, profound moment in history, that we are going to make a choice that's going to affect generations to come. That being the context of that, of this moment, really gets down to the fact that on a macro level, we have a binary choice: Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump will be president of the United States, and one of those choices is just certainly untenable for a number of reasons, and I don't have to enumerate all the reasons why the Republican nominee just does not fit the times for what this country needs. I would, however, take issue with some of the points that the good doctor made. One, I don't think that it's a failure of the Democratic Party that has led to the rise of Trump. Folks who are supporting Trump are not dissatisfied with the progressive leanings of the Democratic Party. They are, in actuality, really frustrated by the incremental progress that the Democratic Party is making. Those who are supporting Donald Trump are largely white males in the South, or at least in rural communities, where the Democratic Party does not really fight for votes or fight for support. We can definitely argue about whether or not we should or not. I think ultimately where we are is that this is a great moment of time where our activism, such a period of activism, unlike any I've seen in my lifetime, and we're trying to reconcile that with having extraordinary hopes and dreams and looking at ordinary candidates. But I think that the real opportunity here is for us to take our activism and take our frustrations and take our hopes and dreams and really work with a candidate that is much more progressive than the alternative. I definitely support the notion of third parties, green parties, independents. I think the back and forth tug of war is important for the debate. I really appreciate what Senator Sanders did in the Democratic primary. I think he did a complete service to the progressive movement. By the end of the day, Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump will be president of the United States, and one of those choices just does not work.
So, Carla, let me bring you into your opening thoughts here as well. I have very specific questions I want to throw out to you all. Carla?
Sure. I guess my main thought is that it just seems to me that progressives are a bit upset that they just haven't been as effective as, the extreme right has been. Because what we're seeing really is just the success of this extreme right Tea Party, totally disaffected Republican constituency.
Absolutely.
That has been so good that they have managed to completely circumvent the Republican process and the party and elect Donald Trump as their nominee. And that to me is just it's just evidence of how good their movement and their arm has been. Progressives have been nowhere near as successful. They came a little bit closer with Bernie Sanders this year, but weren't able to, to completely see it through. So I think part of the problem is, progressives are feeling like, okay, the Democratic Party stronghold is such that, they weren't able to make this happen. So maybe that's one of the reasons why now they want to double down and say, no, Hillary Clinton is not our choice. We've got to, make it clear. But I don't think this is right now the hill to die on this one. This is too big an election. And, as a couple of the guests have already said, there are two choices. This is it. It's Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. And, there's so much that needs to be done for progressives to get to the point where maybe, they have their own Bernie or whoever, Jill Stein or whatever down the road. But this year, the choice is what we have. And, the work needs to continue on local levels, in mayorships and senates and congressional races or whatever across the country. But this isn't the place to stop to try to draw that line in the sand.
So let me ask this question to the four of you. We're at an interesting juncture. I was reading this morning online that Atlantic Monthly came out and endorsed Hillary Clinton. And it's actually only the third time in its history. I think the magazine started in late 1858. Mm-hmm. The first, because they were against slavery, they oddly enough, because given that election in 1860 when four parties were running, they endorsed Abraham Lincoln. Yep. As the only way to end slavery, even though they knew he was not
a very practical abolitionist.
They said we have to vote for Lincoln, and then Goldwater and Johnson in 1964.
The war.
They went with Johnson, and we still had the Vietnam War. They killed millions of Vietnamese in 57,000. My brother's on the field in Vietnam, but then we have this election where they endorsed. With Trump and Hillary, endorse Hillary, which is significant. So the question I have with that, given this historical moment we're in, given that I'm curious what we think the Democratic Party is. And Jared, I know that look at your stuff, Liza. Let me go to you first, Liza, because I know you got to jump out of here in 10 minutes. But and then Jared, I think that, Liza, I know you identify as a socialist feminist. I know, Jared, you were very clear about your revolutionary politics, and both very important. And sometimes we look at the Democratic Party as this corporate monolith of this the liberal end of the 1%, and then it's their party. Though it's also become the party where women, feminists, African Americans, Many Latino populations in this country, LGBTQ people in this country, have found a voice and what passes for a modicum of power or power itself. Mm-hmm. You can argue that either way. So what is that the party? Is it something else? You know, what is it that we see happening here with that? Liza, I'll let you start. I want to hear Jared. I'm dying to hear what you all think about that.
I do think that Democratic Party is a vessel for corporate interests. I agree with the people who are saying that the crucial thing is to build independent politics from the ground up. I think that history in other countries really shows that how you do that is from the ground up, usually at the local level. Though I think the Bernie campaign was incredibly exciting at getting new ideas that have generally been excluded from the Democratic Party into the discourse, and that was terrific, and we're hopefully going to see the positive political impact of that for a long time to come. But as a couple of people have said, presidential elections are what they are. You don't really build left institutional power through them in the long run. In this case, you choose between a incredibly horrendous set of choices, and you know that one of those people is going to be president.
Jared?
Well, I mean, yes. So I agree that many diverse people claim, at least, to have a voice within the Democratic Party.
Right.
The success of the right is largely based in the failure of there being a legitimate option actually offered by the Democrats, whose failure is being unable to capture the majority, who would be more likely to support radical options against which the Democratic Party actually stands. Hence, as we saw with the WikiLeaks exposure, the party's destruction of the Bernie Sanders campaign from within, who, even though Bernie was polling at higher rates when asked who would be more likely to beat Trump, it was proved that the Democratic Party would rather lose with Hillary Clinton than win with Bernie Sanders, which I think fully, more than maybe any other time in modern history, exposes clearly what the party actually is. If you go back from 2006 on, the Democratic Party became the centerpiece for Wall Street funding. Barack Obama, even at the moment where people thought this was the change, you know, that has come, he was the most heavily funded Wall Street candidate in political history in this country. And we see from the policies that he has enacted over the last 8 years that that's exactly what they got. And then very finally, quickly, I always want to remind people of what the so-called founders actually said about this thing called a republic, when in Federalist Paper number 10, James Madison lays out how this system is designed specifically to prevent the vote from being used as a mechanism for structural change. So we have to, I think, challenge the system that if, in fact, the vote is to be used for real change, we're going to have to do it outside of what has been proposed as our only option. And I hear that people are saying that this is a different and terrifying moment, but I feel like this is something that I've heard my entire adult life. And I feel like also that since we've survived enslavement and Jim Crow and Nixon and Reagan and so many others, that we would be able to survive a Donald Trump. I think that we give, you know, too much emphasis to this boogeyman and are again being scared out of what should be, I think, our righteous and best political act.
Jump in, Quincy, go ahead.
All right, so I think I want to defend the party before I defend the candidate. The Democratic Party obviously is not a perfect party, and though there are those, I am a loyal Democrat, proudly have worked at the party, have worked in the Obama administration, have worked for Hillary Clinton, and those are things that I'm proud of because of the ideals that the Democratic Party espouses to. Have we always done a great job of living what we preach? No, but when you look at the choices between the two featured parties in our system, the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, I think it's unquestionable that over the last 50 to 60 years, the Democratic Party has done so much to advance equal rights and civil rights, and much of the progressive reforms that have made life better for so many in this country. And I will say that and say that I get very frustrated at the lack of representative leadership within the party. But that's not to say that we have not made strides, and I'm a proud Democrat, and I will vouch for the party any day against the Republicans and what they have stood for. Now, Hillary Clinton, specifically, perfect candidate, no, but a woman who has dedicated her entire adult life to fighting on behalf of those who have been disconnected, not powerful enough, and have not always had a voice and a seat at the table. I will say that I respect what Senator Sanders did in this primary by helping to push the party platform to the left and the candidate, the nominee, to the left. But be clear, Bernie Sanders was never a Democrat. And there are those of us who there are those who believe that he was treated incredibly graciously and fairly for being an independent and not and running on the Democratic ticket. Now, what does that mean in a practical sense? This may not mean anything to the layperson out there, but those who are elected officials or Democratic Party activists or just Democratic Party members, we commit ourselves to knocking doors for Democrats, to raising money for Democrats, to doing those things that make our party strong so we can have a stronger voice within the party. Senator Sanders, while progressive as he may be, never had a history of advocating on behalf of the party. So I think he was treated treated very fairly. And, you know, this WikiLeaks, the emails, you're really, and I worked at the Democratic Party for 3 years, and I can tell you, staffers sending emails about a presidential candidate has zero effect. Trust me, the influence of the party apparatus, the building down on South Capitol Street, greatly overstated. So I think we need to do a little bit of demystifying this notion that the party was against Senator Sanders.
Just very quickly, I'm sorry, it wasn't just staffers, by the way. It was Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the head of the entire process. So it wasn't just like it was little underlings sending emails back and forth. It was a discussion from the top down within the party of how they were going to get rid of Bernie.
No, that was never, respectfully, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, I have a lot of issues with her, but she's a former boss of mine, and there was never an email authored under her signature that talked disparagingly about Senator Sanders. That's just not a fact. Sorry about that. And those who were ruminating, trying to, you know, advocate a little too strongly in this process, you know, they were fired. And so I don't think that's a big issue. Trust me, I will be somebody facing enough to know. Tell me, staffers at the DNC carry little, if any, clout.
Well, we do have to take a short break. And Elijah, I know you have to run. I'm sorry we couldn't hear more of you during the course of this conversation, because I know you have to run at the halfway point. We look forward to having you back very soon, though.
Yes, thank you so much.
Always good to have
it's
you
good
on.
Good to hear from you.
Elijah Featherstone, and we'll come back here with Jared Ball, Quincy Gamble, Carla Wills, and you, 410-319-8888. Sergeant Freeman, the first person up. Let us know who you're voting for and why. Are you a Democrat? Not a Democrat? Are you voting for Democrats? Are you voting Green? Or somewhere else? Stay with us. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. I'm here with Dr. Jared Ball, Associate Professor of Media Studies here at Morgan State University, the man who created I Mix What I Like, Quincy Gamble, Democratic Party operative, Carla Wills, senior producer at Democracy Now!, and you at 410-319-8888. But let me just be clear about this. I was just looking this up during the break. Debbie Wasserman Schultz did send an email calling Jeff Weaver, who was Sanders' campaign manager, an a-hole, can't say that word on the air, and a liar, the CFO of the DNC, wrote an email saying, it may make no difference, but for Kentucky and Washington, we can get someone to ask about his belief.
Is that Brad Marshall?
Yes. Yeah. And he had skated on having a Jewish heritage. I read he's an atheist. This could make several points difference with my peeps, my Southern Baptist peeps, and would draw a big difference between a Jew and an atheist.
Inappropriate.
And the DNC National Secretary writes, wondering if there is a good Bernie narrative for a story which is that Bernie never, ever had his act together, that his campaign is a mess. But it was very clear that the power structure of the DNC was trying to derail Bernie Sanders' campaign.
But they have no power. They have no power.
Well, they have power because they have influence. They have ways of getting things done.
Okay.
You know what I mean? They did try to derail his campaign.
I think that's a little hyperbole.
I mean, and Schultz herself tried to maneuver these debates to make it kind of clear to hide them in the wilderness and all the rest.
Sure.
So what do we identify as, Carla Wills? Democrats? Is Carla still there? Carla, you there? All right, is that our phone system?
Oh, hello.
Go ahead, Carla.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I just don't understand how you can totally dismiss, that the party, the party apparatus, which is supposed to be neutral, you know, in running its candidates. Just because these emails may seem more like, there were some harmless comments, clearly the work that was being done was to derail Bernie Sanders' campaign. You can't just kind of, poo-poo that away. The structure from the beginning with the way they set up the debate during the primaries was to advantage Hillary Clinton. There was no way. And it was very clear that Debbie Watson herself was a Clinton a supporter from the beginning. And so, I think we do need to take seriously what that setup was from the beginning. And Bernie Sanders supporters definitely took it seriously. And so there is, I think, part of what they did is part of why we're seeing what we're seeing now. With so many progressives feeling like they cannot support Hillary Clinton. Some of it, yes, is her policies her record in the past, but a lot of it is that they felt like they weren't even given a fair shot. So, it leaves a bad taste in folks' mouth that we're at this point where Hillary Clinton is the nominee and you just feel like, well, that was kind of it was set up to be that way, and that their vote didn't matter in the primary. So I just feel like we need to make sure we acknowledge that and take seriously.
Allowing an independent to run in the Democratic Party primary, I think is showing confidence, grace towards Senator Sanders, and a lot of Democrats voted for the senator. And even though I think,
but he had to register as a Democrat. He was a Democrat.
Yeah, he was. But I'm talking about his career. His career has been as an independent. And we've moved past the primary. I think we can all say yes. Senator Sanders ran really hard, and some of those in the party were not as open to his candidacy. I honestly think it had more to do with the fact that he was not a Democrat and not the fact of his policies.
So we have a lot of callers, but Jared, you were trying to say something real fast.
I was just trying to say that for me, this isn't about the primary. It's about trying to identify what the role and the function of the Democratic Party is. And my view in this is not just with this immediate campaign season, but going even farther back to the origins of the whole Clinton industry, with the Democratic Leadership Council and the right wing of the Democratic Party wanting a response and a way to bring the Democrat to bring elections or bring Republicans or centrists back into the party after Reagan. This is what the whole mission has been, to keep people from going too far to the left, or to keep the party from being seen as something that is too far away from the right. And this is why, again, the sophistication in the allowing of Sanders to run on the Democratic ticket was that it was understood within the party that because of the tenor and the direction of the society and potential voters, that they knew that they had to bring people back into the party, and that Hillary by herself could not do it, and that Democrats proper could not do it. So it was understood, and I agree again with Bruce Dixon at Black Agenda Report, that Bernie was sheepdogging for the Democratic Party. And that's exactly what we see happening now, making this as a closer race than it should be, because given the real response of actual people on the left and progressives, Hillary would be getting crushed right now if it wasn't for Bernie bringing them all back, so many of them back into the party. So that's the sophistication of the party. That was not some beneficent act
right.
of the Democratic Party.
Well, I think there's a real struggle inside the Democratic Party as there is inside the Republican Party. And I saw the Dixon thing. I've always wanted to talk to him about that on the air, because I don't agree with the analysis that Sanders was sheepdogging. I think he was honestly making a campaign to pull the party to the left. And I think that's part of the problem. We have a country that's really trying to figure out and define ourselves. People who think about the future of this nation are thinking about it in very, very different ways. And I think that's trying to find this core, because it's been about the Democrats and Republicans for so long that trying to go somewhere else has not worked. But I think things are coming apart in a way that may redefine that political structure, which I'd love to hear your thoughts about, all of you. But let me go to the phones, I promise. Lots of folks are calling in. Let's go first to retired Air Force Sergeant Freeman. You're on the air. Welcome.
Yeah, how you doing?
Very well.
And everyone on your panel there.
Good morning.
You remember when I called into the show when Donald Trump was here in town in Baltimore for the Air Force
Yes.
Which he had no right to be here because he had 9 deferments. But let me give you an idea of the type of individual that was actually down there. And I agree with Carla wholeheartedly about what she's saying. But the type of individual that he is throwing venom into their veins is, I saw signs and T-shirts indicating build more nuclear bombs because Trump knows where the button is. Hmm. The other T-shirt said, and a black man wore this T-shirt, he said, Hillary Clinton to prison because the White House is too black. That's the type of individual that I also saw at the Republican convention in Cleveland when I heard on television where the gentleman said this plant was prosperous from 1976 to 1985, and then my son is sleeping on a couch and he's on oxycodone and on crack and everything, and I'm blaming it on Barack Obama. And it just dawned on me at that moment. I said, your problem, sir, is you should have been investing in a Winnebago or a U-Haul truck, because Barack Obama didn't kill that plant. Technology killed the plant. You should have been moving on. And that Republican Party does not believe in any type of global warming or anything like that, because maybe we can build those plants back again with wind tunnels and things instead of shipping off the work to Canada or Mexico or something like that.
Okay.
So that ideology, and let me finish, that ideology is permeating through this whole situation right now, where I just watched Selma this morning, and I got to believe that we will go back to Jim Crow. I totally believe that. And if you think the type of conversations that Johnson had with J. Edgar Hoover and all those other people back then, trust me, they will have those type of conversations if Trump gets into the White House with all his cronies. So wake up, everybody. It's going to be a major, major headache for us. You think it's bad now. I mean, the vice president debate the other night, basically, I mean, he doubled down on everything Trump said, yet also he went the other direction on a lot of issues, but he is just as worse. And guess where I'm from? I'm from Indiana.
So is my wife.
I know what's going on in that state.
Rough out there, right?
Indiana's rough. Sergeant Freeman, thing I know. My wife is also from Indiana.
What part?
She's from up north.
Okay, Elkhart or Gary, that type of thing?
Fort Wayne.
Okay, my East Chicago, that kind of thing.
Right.
My most of my family is in Indianapolis, and I was born where he claims to be, Pence, in southern Indiana.
Well,
it's almost, and by the way, as you well know, it's the birth of the KKK, as you well know, in that state, as they say.
Sergeant,
trust me, I grew up in that state. I integrated elementary schools. I'm not that smart, but if they had asked me how well I am in self-defense, I probably would have been magna cum laude.
Well, Sergeant, always good to hear your voice. Thank you for calling. Let's get another call in here. Come back to our guests. And Indiana is also the birthplace of Eugene V. Debs. Let me throw that out there as well.
There you go.
So, let's go to Stephen. You're on the air. And then we'll come back to our guest here.
Hey, that was the perfect segue, because I definitely have been feeling this sense of Jim Crowism coming back as well. And I mean, it didn't start with the first debate, but it was crystallized in that first debate that neither one of the major party candidates actually care about the black family, but specifically the black male vote, which Bill Clinton worked as hard as he could to get taken away from us by having us locked up. And now his Hillary is coming back and speaking, from my perspective in the first debate and through her policies that I've seen, the majority of what she's speaking to is to women, specifically professional white women. And it's like the black family and the black people, black men specifically, are not a voting bloc that they don't take seriously. They don't take us seriously on either end, because the black vote is captured by the Democratic Party. And the Republican Party is basically, you know, stoking our hatred for the Democrats. They say, oh, look what you got there. How's that going for you? You know what I mean? Look what you're doing. Look what they're doing for you. And now, you know, we gotta figure, you know, what are we gonna do? We trapped between a rock and a hard place. Anyway, I spoke before. I called you before. Hillary's not ending the drug war, nor the war on terrorism. So it's gonna be continuing Jim Crowism. But also, I also wanted to mention that the Green Party, in and of itself, began with the environmental issues. And what did we just have come up 3 weeks ago? The carbon, we reached the carbon tipping point. And I felt appalled over the land once we reached the carbon tipping point. And now the environment and the earth is reacting. And just like my man said, we're unprepared for what's happening with us, with our land, and with our environment. And I mean, I wish Jill Stein was on stage to at least speak to that. You know, even if people aren't going to vote for her, you know, we need to hear about what's happening,
right,
and how the world is changing, and that environmentally, and how it's going to affect us, and what we can do to make things as a collective outside of the 1%. You know, because Hillary went around promoting fracking everywhere around the world, and she probably doesn't believe in climate change unless, you know, the money changers just tell her to.
Appreciate the call.
No problem.
Thank you for coming and joining us here, and we'll get to the other phone callers as well. So okay. some responses. I mean, I think that Sergeant Freeman and Stephen had very different ideas about who they're going to vote for and why. And what we're facing in this country. And I think climate change was not a topic in the last debates. It has not come up. It's very real.
Right. Along with other issues.
Right.
We only had one debate. We've got two more to go. So I think, but if climate change is a deciding issue for you, and it should be, I think Clinton versus Trump, light years away from their approach to climate change, and look at, you know, what President Obama has done over the last year in signing the Paris Agreement, universally known as probably the most progressive stance on climate change. He was a leader on that. Just came out earlier this week that Al Gore will be hitting the trail for Secretary Clinton, specifically to engage young voters around the issues of climate change. But on a whole host of issues, I guess as a person who's, I guess, consider myself a political professional, you look at just the campaigns of these two individuals, just look at their websites and look at white papers and position papers. While they don't tell the totality of what's in a person's heart, I think it does go a long way in showing you that a person and their team has been thoughtful about the issues and challenges that are facing our country today. And as an African-American male in this country, I'm deeply troubled that Donald Trump would get anywhere close to Pennsylvania Avenue, anywhere closer than his hotel, because Hillary Clinton has put forth very progressive ideas that will affect the black family, criminal justice reform, undoing some of the wrongs of the 90s that so many beyond the Clintons were complicit in, by the way. But yeah.
So, and Carla, the Greens were brought up, as were libertarians, and I know that Democracy Now! Has had their responses well, the Green, the Libertarian VP candidate didn't come back. But so I'm curious, what do you think would have happened? What happens to this dialogue if, and I'll, Jared, you're going to jump in this too before we go back to the phones, if the Greens party candidate and the Libertarian party candidate were in these debates?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's part of the reason why Democracy Now! Does those expanded shows, where we expand the debate in real time. We did that on just Tuesday night.
Right, right.
You know, with Ajamu Baraka, you know, and he was able to interject and answer the same questions that the moderator posed to Tim Kaine and Mike Pence. And I think it does help. It helps to have them on the stage, but, you know, for the most part, it's almost a foregone conclusion, and we've seen it happen in the past. Those few debates when third-party candidates have been able to participate, and I don't know, I guess they just don't seem to have the opportunity to really be heard. I mean, part of the problem is, I mean, and I fault those parties. You know, they tend to be very much single-issue kind of parties and don't always have as, you know, as full-throated an answer to, you know, our issues with, you know, Russia or, you know, especially any mostly international foreign policy issues as they do on other issues, domestic issues. And so I think there needs to be work done on the party side, whether it's the Green Party, the Libertarian Party. You know, of course, you had the crazy incident where, you know, the Libertarian candidate, Gary Johnson, didn't know what Aleppo was. Well, he knew what Aleppo was, but he couldn't really, you know.
You're being generous.
Couldn't really say what it was at the time, you know. And so, I mean, I just feel like sometimes while we love the idea of a third-party candidacy, I think those parties have to do more work to really be ready to be elected. I mean, if you're really going to go in and be, you know, 100% in. But the Democratic Party, you know, as you know, the guests have said, I mean, there's been this drift toward the center to you know, kind of expand and bring in more people that I think has had mixed results. And so what this election, more than anything, to me shows is that the problem that with the two-party system not working now, because there are way too many people who are left out, and the only options are to try to fit this, you know, these other disparate voices, these other disaffected Republicans and Democrats into the existing system, and it's showing the real problems with each of these parties. So, you know, where it goes now will be interesting, and I'm hoping what it means is that work starts to really get done on the local level. And I think Baltimore, there's some real work being done, at least on the Green Party side, and that's encouraging. And I think that's what needs to be happening more around the country.
So picking up on that point, Jared Bob, on the last point that Carla just made, I want to push that a little bit. I think that one of the critiques I've read about the Green Party, and I think it's some justification to this, is that they should stop worrying so much about these presidential elections if they're really serious about building a party, and start working on the ground to organize in communities where they think they have a potential base to build. I mean, you know, you're seeing, like here in Baltimore, you see Joshua Harris's campaign for mayor. And they are beginning to do some work with people like Annie Chambers and others on the in the housing projects, trying to get a voice out there, talking to people who were formerly incarcerated. But if you're going to build a movement, you don't build a movement by running presidential campaigns. You build a movement by hardcore organizing, which I don't see going on.
Yeah. Well, with all due respect to the points that you and Carla just made, the issue with the Green Party or alternative parties is not that they can't produce viable candidates. It's that, in large part, the Democratic Party, working with the Republican Party through the Commission on Public Presidential Debates, have blocked all the, you know, the blocked anybody from being legitimate.
Oh, that's true. There's no argument about that. Yeah, right.
And then beyond that, the Democratic Party, more than the Republican Party, has led the charge with hundreds of attempts on local levels to block Green Party candidates from even being put on ballots. So it's not that, and even despite that, there are more than 100 Green Party candidates elected to local offices throughout the country. So it's not that the Green Party isn't doing grassroots local work. Granted, they could be doing much better, much more, but they are doing that. It's that, but there is also the need to run the national campaign in part to keep the ballot lines, in part to keep the national profile up, and in part to function as a political party would function. So if those who have the legitimately left or progressive political values, particularly those with access and media access to and an audience, would actually promote or encourage investigation or inclusion of the Green Party or the Party for Socialism and Liberation or any other, I think we would have we would see the kind of flourishing take off that many claim they want to see happen, but put all on the Green Party as if they have to do everything without any assistance, and as if the two dominant parties are themselves producing candidates that are prepared to hold office. I think one of the problems we're having even in this conversation is that the Republican Party especially has produced a candidate and several candidates, even with Sarah Palin and others, who are clearly not qualified or capable of leading anybody. Certainly the Green Party doesn't have the issues that Gary Johnson has with their candidate. the issue of the climate was brought up and our other panelist guest was defending the Democratic Party. But I think if people do actually look at the platforms, this is not a defense of Trump. It is a condemnation of the Democratic Party, who even under Obama, it has been said by many of those who follow the climate issue more closely, that Obama has been either two-faced or entirely phony in his defense of environmental rights, where on one hand he will publicly say, for instance, that he is drawing down nuclear weaponry and the importance of nuclear arms in the world, while at the same time promising to spend over $1 trillion to modernize nuclear weapons programs. So I think never mind the TPP and all the other things that I do believe, despite what she claims now, Hillary Clinton will end up supporting, as she promised to initially. So when I think if we look more honestly at the Democratic Party and then compare it not to the Republicans but to the Green Party and look at that platform without corporate funding, without that has a true environmental and redistributionist platform, et cetera, and so forth, we would see that there are options that we can begin to build. And then very lastly, let me just say this. If folks on this election are convinced that Trump is the boogeyman that we've never seen, fine. I am at least willing to capitulate for this moment and say, go ahead and vote for Hillary. But then at least promise or make a commitment to after the election, really investigate and think about building an actual option, because the people who keep telling us we never build an option and we're never prepared at these moments to actually enact those options also don't help us build those options in the off campaign cycle. So come on with us. If you can't do it now, which I think you should, come on with us after the election.
Deal.
Yeah, and that I would agree with. You're right there, Jared. Build that option after you vote for Hillary Clinton.
I mean,
because here's what you're saying. Republicans, and I know you said don't compare Democratic Party to the Republican Party, but the Republican Party, it wasn't a failure of them putting out the right candidate. They had viable choices other than Donald Trump. What it was the Republican voters that completely, put the will of the party itself was tamped down by the voters themselves, which is what's scary about this. And so it's not just Donald Trump. We're talking about, boasting these voters. This like we had a caller who said they fear the rise of Jim Crow again, and Eliza was talking about this underbelly of American society that thinks like Donald Trump. And so that's part of the danger. It's not about just Donald Trump being president. It's about sanctioning this particular kind of voice that is dangerous and cannot have that kind of power. And so, I agree with you. The work has to be done so that a third party, a viable progressive party, can run a candidate. But what I think is that the Republican Party has been completely usurped. And so instead of having their own third party, the far right kind of party, they were able to take over the Republican Party and run this guy. And that's what I think we need to make sure that kind of energy happens on the right, so that on the left, so that a real progressive candidate can run as well.
So
they were pretty smart in that way. You know, like, let's not even try the third party route. We could make this happen within the party, and they did.
Let me try to get a couple of calls in here before we end the hour. This has been a fascinating conversation. I want to have more of these. And we talk about Dom Palmer, but on Facebook, said the biggest danger in this election is maybe not be Trump, but Mr. Pence, who's one of the most right-wing candidates who's ever run for anything in this country. But let me go quickly. Wayne, you're on the air still? He's gone? Wayne, you're on the air. No, okay. Wayne?
Leonard, go ahead.
Quick thought, Leonard. We're almost out of time. I apologize.
Yes, quick thought. This is my first time calling, but
I
want to respond to what the panelist said about the this boogeyman thing.
Well, go ahead. Respond.
That I can't believe that as black people we're still going for that. And, you know, I agree totally with him that we would survive Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump or anybody else. So we need to look for some viable alternatives and stop going for the same old warmed over stuff, you know, over and over again that's not working. And you know, have some courage, first of all, and some smarts about how we vote. We don't have anything to lose by not voting for the Democrats, which was the smartest thing that Donald Trump did.
So who are you voting for?
Not that we're going to vote for him either. I'm voting for neither one of them.
Okay, which is you're not voting.
I'm not voting for neither one of them. I'm setting this one up.
So I think there are a lot of folks who are that's an option that also the people are taking.
That's unfortunate. I mean, speaking as an African American, it's really unfortunate to hear that so many of our foremothers and fathers literally died in the streets to give us this precious gift of franchise.
Man, not to vote for the lesser of evils. That shibboleth and myth has got to be put to rest too. The people who fought for the right to vote were fighting for the right for us to have access to power. And seeing how limited the Democratic Party is in terms of access to power, we can't keep going back to that and say that if we don't vote for the Democrat or the lesser of evil, we're disrespecting our ancestors.
I just respectfully disagree.
Anything to lose. We have a Supreme Court, maybe two justices to lose. We have immigration battles to lose. We have women's rights to choose to lose. We have so much that we would lose if we have Donald Trump in the White House. So this is not just the lesser of two evils.
And we have progress.
And we have a clock on the radio show, and we're up against it right now. So, Carla, you've had the last thought for the day. Carla Wilson, senior producer, Democracy Now!, Jared Ball, associate professor of media studies here at Morgan State University, Quincy Gamble, Democratic Party operative.
Thank you.
Thank all of you so much, along with Elijah Feathers, for
Thank
joining
you.
Us.
Vote Great for Hillary. I'm with her.
Oh, you can't believe you snuck that one right on in. So good to have you all here. Thank you so much.
Enjoy the talk.
It's Thursday. It's time for Sound Bites. We're looking at black food justice and freedom and solar power in the next hour. Stay with us.